Welcome to The Apologist by the Cantaro Institute, a podcast for the advancement of the Christian philosophy of life. Your host is Christian thinker and Institute Director Stephen R. Martins.
Welcome to The Apologist, brought to you by the Cantaro Institute. If you're just joining us, the Cantaro Institute is a Reformed evangelical organization committed to the advancement of the Christian worldview for the reformation and renewal of the church and culture. And if you've actually been with us before, you'll know that our last episode was with Dr. Andrew Sandlin. We've been on a little bit of a hiatus, just trying to get some rest for our next long line of interviews that we've got for you. And today we have a special guest, a good friend of mine, actually, whom I had the pleasure of working with for a time, and just wonderful to see where he is at now. Our last session was on cultural Marxism. This is somewhat related, though not directly, but it is somewhat related because it is very relevant. We're looking at Christian education today. What is it? Why do we need it? And what can we learn from it? What are some ways that we can get involved in Christian education? But of course, given that this is a podcast all about apologetics, the question will eventually come up, and it'll probably come up sooner than later. Why do we need Christian education? Our guest today is Ryan Aris. Ryan Aris and I have we go back quite a bit. We worked together for the Ezra Institute for a few years. And we're now in both in different places, but still serving the Lord and still serving God's kingdom. And Ryan, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? Well, more for our guests here. I know you happen to be my next door neighbor.
That's true.
Yeah. But yeah, just how about you share a little bit about yourself, a little bit of your background, what you're involved in today?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Stephen. As you've mentioned there, you and I have got a bit of a history of working together at the Ezra Institute and having, I think we had studied together for a brief time and then at Westminster Chapel together in Toronto as well. And since then it's been wonderful to see the things that you have been doing and the work of the Cantaro Institute and the other the projects that you've been involved with. As for me, I've up until fairly recently, I have continued to work with the Ezra Institute, and I've been very grateful for the time that I've had there. But the reason that we're talking today on the subject of education is because I have very recently stepped away from that role. To serve as the founding headmaster of a new Christian school here in Niagara. And it's called Niagara Classical Academy. We've done that for several reasons, which I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk about. My wife and I have been involved in classical Christian education for about a decade now. We've got five children. My oldest has just turned 13, which is wild to think about because I still think of myself as about 22, but we've got some deep experience and had the opportunity to be sort of mentored and instructed by some very very knowledgeable people be involved in the founding of several schools, have our children in the schools, teach at those schools. And we have identified a need and a vacancy for a Christian school in the Niagara region here, where you and I live, where the classical methodology, which is what we're familiar with, which is what we endorse and support, where that is the guiding methodology, method of instruction and teaching philosophy.
That's awesome, Ryan. And that kind of opens up into our next question here. Well, actually, it's more like two questions. You introduced a particular term that most people aren't quite aware of. You know, those who might be well entrenched in education would know it, but most people don't. When you mention the word classical, so first of all, why a Christian education? Why is that even necessary for our children? I mean, there are people who today would say, you know, we live in a secular society. We have our secular schools, supposedly irreligious schools, right? We also have the Catholic school system if you really want something with a religious bent to it. Why a Christian education? You know, these are questions that we're asked from outside in the world, but for us Christians, I mean, that's a pretty legitimate question to be asked, and our response really isn't apologetic to that. Well, what do you generally say to that?
Yeah, that is it is a reasonable question, and it is certainly a question that we ought to have an answer to. The way that I often answer that kind of a question is to try to take a step back and ask what is the purpose of education generally? Once we can answer that, then we can get into a discussion of whether and why we need a particular type of education or a particular trajectory to the education that we provide our children. So the purpose of education, what is education for, is the what thing we have to answer first. And first of all, education is one of these inescapable concepts. So in other words, we all educate. We all do it, whether we do it consciously or unconsciously, whether we do it systematically or haphazardly, whether we do it in a Christian or Islamic or Hindu or secular way, and in along those trajectories, we all do it. You can't not do it. It's not a question of whether, but of which. So, with that in mind, we believe that as Christians, that our Christian children, if we are to take the scriptures seriously, to bring up our children in the fear and discipline and knowledge of the Lord, then that is really the mandate for a Christian education. And again, any education, as I mentioned, it's not whether, but it's which. And when you're talking about education, especially in the context of educating children, educating the younger generation, you're talking about a plan for the future. You are passing on the knowledge, yes, but also the values, also the beliefs and assumptions and commitments that you think are most important, that you want to protect and preserve, that you think our society is going to need, that you think our children are going to need to be sincere and productive participants and leaders in that society.
We've been talking about worldviews on our podcast the past couple of episodes that we've had and with our different guests. And just thinking back to, I believe it was the Enlightenment that this concept of the tabula rasa, of this blank slate arose, in which much of public education is sort of based on, which the belief is that people are blank slates. They don't really have any kind of preconceptions or presuppositions. And it's a matter of just educating them according to a certain image, or according to a certain standard and norm, but it really isn't that way. That's not how human beings are. We don't start out like a computer without any sort of programming, so to speak. You know, we're not just hardware. As we discussed worldviews in the past, we talked about how there are really only two orientations to our worship. We're either worshiping God or we're worshiping creation. There's either the truth or the lie, or the thesis or the antithesis. And when we're talking about education or Christian education, we're talking about an education that presupposes that which is true, that presupposes God's thesis, that presupposes the true Christian worldview, as opposed to the alternative non-Christian and therefore antithetical worldviews that permeate a lot of our other educational approaches or models and schools that we see out in the world. And that brings me to my next question. So you've mentioned classical education in regards to Christian education. And while you don't necessarily have to have a classical education for a Christian education, nonetheless, there is something incredibly valuable in classical education. Maybe you can expand a bit about that. What exactly is it? And why should a Christian educator, whether it's a homeschooler or even a teacher or a principal, should consider it?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Yeah, you're right. So I've been talking about and endorsing tacitly so far a classical Christian education. So that's to speak of education with two adjectives. And of those two, as a Christian, I will say that Christian is the more important one. Christian is the one that you can't do without, as you've mentioned. The classical methodology takes its name is so-called because it reaches back to and looks at some of the principles and methodologies found in the education that people would have received in the classical period of history. That's the Greco-Roman period of history. This is the context in which Christianity was born, providentially. This is the context in which many of the early church fathers were educated. This was the methodology, this was the type of education that they would have received. And while on the one hand, we do not seek to baptize Greco-Roman beliefs and assumptions, we acknowledge that these were pre-Christian Gentile pagans. They did not know the one true God. They had beliefs. You spoke about being antithetical. They had beliefs that were antithetical to the gospel, particularly when it came to questions of what is a human being? Like, who qualifies as a person? Slavery was rampant. All of the most oppressive forms of patriarchy were rampant in the sense where a child did not achieve legitimacy or the right to life until the father acknowledged that child. This was the context in which Christianity was birthed, and there are famous well-known accounts of early Christians going through the streets and picking up abandoned children who were left exposed, left to die, because Christians understood that human beings are made in the image of God, which the classical world, the classical pagan world, had no such commitment or assumption. So, all that to say, I guess yeah, to stack the deck against it a little bit, why do we pursue a classical education if that was the sort of thing that was happening in the classical period? And the answer is that for all of their inconsistencies, this was a worldview that was asking the right questions. This was the period in which philosophy, literature, history, science flourished, and in the providence of God, the Christian worldview has taken those disciplines and continued to advance them. But it was a classical mindset with an understanding that there is a truth that exists in the world that exists about the world, that truth can be knowable, that things like beauty exist, that goodness exists, that virtue exists. Virtue, being what we would often call today good character. So courage, selflessness, generosity, kindness, these kinds of things that we know that we have terminology for from scripture. A classical methodology, a classical mindset understands that those things exist and that they have real content. Compare that to many other educational philosophies or approaches where these words we like these words, we think we know what love and kindness and generosity and friendship mean, but we're too ready to fill those with whatever content sort of happens to be convenient or happens to be we happen to be trying to emphasize. And it's a shifting and inconsistent basis on which to build something compared to a classical methodology that has solid and secure categories and ways to understand and approach the task of education, which again, as you're talking about children, as you're talking about shaping their hearts and their minds, as you're talking about providing them with not just content, but you're modeling a certain type of person, a certain type of character that you hope that they will become. That this is very important. The consistency is really indispensable. If you've got if you don't have consistency in what you're trying to demonstrate and model, you're not going to have a reliable, dependable, graduate and fully formed adult.
Now you're about to be the principal, and it's not that long. I think in the month of April you'll be the principal of the Niagara Classical Christian Academy. But this isn't your first time being somewhat involved with a classical academy. You know, I remember back when we were both in Toronto, you weren't directly employed for the Westminster Christian Classical Academy, but you were there nonetheless. So I imagine there must have been a lot of cross-pollination there. And Cindy and I, you know, right now we've got three boys, one of which is being homeschooled, the other is just about to get started in September. And we've been trying to adopt a lot of these, you know, classical methods of teaching, which you guys have actually been modeling for us, and we've been very thankful to God for that providence. And as we've started this journey as homeschoolers, I mean, your children are homeschooled, and both you and your wife have, are putting in an effort to raise them right according to the word of truth. A lot of our listeners, well, they're thinking Christians as they listen to our episodes, and they're also readers. And so, what kind of resources would you recommend for those who are looking to implement classical education for the children that they're homeschooling, or even the children that they are looking to put into a Christian school?
Good question. Huge question. I'm gonna have to ask you to narrow that down a little bit. So that I mean that'll really depend on the age and temperament of your children. You mentioned your wife Cindy, who has come to a teacher training event that we've run every summer for the past several years. And one of the things that a classical approach will do in any context is a classical approach to education takes responsibility for its own tradition. So I'm hesitant to try to make a bunch of negative comparisons, but these are sort of the most obvious ways to make the connection in this case. So we've been hearing a lot in the public school system in North America about banning books that are triggering, books written in an earlier time that deal with difficult realities like slavery, like war, like divorce, books like Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer, classic works of literature, but works that use language that is not acceptable to the current reigning paradigm and worldview. And so those books have been quietly hushed up. They've been suppressed and removed from school libraries, removed from reading lists to and I would say that all of those actions have been done to the detriment of our students, because if we are going to reject out of hand a books that deal with and or that use certain language, we're not going to be able to interact with it in a godly way. We're going to be totally unprepared for when these subjects come up in the real world. We're not going to understand how to think about them because we've never been trained to do so. So the Western tradition, the classical tradition, takes responsibility for its own heritage. So we would affirm with contemporary secularists that slavery is bad. But what is the standard by which we make that claim? And how do we evaluate that? Right? A classical Christian education has that standard. A secularist with an ever-evolving sense of morality does not have a clear answer to that question. And so to get back to the training that we do, we read those books, we interact with them, we discuss the ideas contained therein. In our house, because we have my wife has an Arabic background, we have Arabic language memorization work and stories, and that's part of our curriculum. In your house, your family, your wife will be using more South American and Spanish language stories and memory work and resources because that's your heritage, that's your tradition. It's important to you to that your sons are able to interact with that material. So that's I'm not trying to avoid your question. I know you said what books do we read? So you read the books that have been important in the formation of the worldview of the culture that you are living in and that you are self-consciously participating in. So there is, and you can Google any classical reading lists. You're going to find variation, but you're going to find much of the same thing. The Odyssey, the Iliad, works of Homer from the classical period, works of Dante and Augustine from the medieval period, Piers Plowman, all the way through. Now I'm trying to think of a reading list, but that's Anyway,
Well, I think you do provide reading lists, if I'm not mistaken, when you have your summer trainings or sessions, if I'm not mistaken, because I remember Cindy bringing back a list. I think that was something that you guys happen to use as a guide.
that's correct.
Before we go on, is that sort of summer session or event that you have at your house, is that happening every summer? And if so, if someone wants more information about that, is that posted publicly anywhere? Do you guys have a website to refer to?
Yes, yeah, thank you for asking. So we run that, we have been running that as a small organization, training organization for adults called Wolf's Head House. And that's wolfsheadhouse.org. That is a reference to Robin Hood, which is a wonderful story that I should have mentioned earlier. And that's something that we run every summer. We do it at our home, and we also run worldview training, in instruction in Christian worldview, sort of on a throughout the year for a adult audience or a senior teen kind of level. And that is something that we run at home, and I'll be happy to get you the link for that.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. We can definitely include that in our podcast episode description so people can check that out. I appreciate that. That was a really profound and deep answer. It was kind of funny because I think I meant my question more simply, kind of like, hey, you have a primer that people can read about Christian education or Christian classical education. You went way deeper than that, which I'm profoundly.
Oh.
That was providential. I'm thankful for that. but so I think you gave a whole lot of hands-on resources for teachers to get into. But Just to kind of take a quick step back to kind of set the table, so to speak. If there's this one primer or one small book as an introduction to classical Christian education, what would you recommend?
Yeah, for sure. Okay, that's way easier. We could have been done a long time ago. So there are and even here, I'm gonna take more than 10 seconds to answer it, because anytime you're talking about classical education, you're gonna meet with a series of opinions. Classical education is a well-defined sphere, but there are several sort of flavors to it, and these show up in the approach to education. They show up in the school culture of whether it's a home school or a day school. I would say there are two that have really been a guide for me, two and a half. And the half is just a little, 40-page booklet called An Introduction to Classical Christian Education. That's by Christopher Perrin. And that is really, we read that book, my wife and I, in about an hour when our children were school aged. And it was so providential. It really kind of got us in on the ground floor. This is right when Westminster Classical was getting started, as you referred to earlier, and this really sold us on the approach, the methodology, the philosophy, and it is something that we've since gone out and bought a box of them so that we can hand them out. This is a terrific little resource. That's the half. If you have an hour to spend and you want to learn all about why Christian classical education, that's the thing to do. And it's just an introduction to classical Christian education by Christopher Perrin. The other one, it's the One is The Case for Classical Christian Education by Douglas Wilson. That's another really excellent book that lays out in a very soup to nuts format a lot of the thinking, but lands it at, Wilson has a real knack for this, for taking principles and landing them in the real world in a way that you can act on. So Douglas Wilson's Case for Classical Christian Education. And the third is Virtue and Eloquence by, I've forgotten their first names. The authors are Little John and Evans. And that's also in a slightly different, with slightly different emphases than Wilson's, but it's also an accessible mixture of principle and application.
I thank you for that, Ryan. Those are excellent recommendations. And I'm not an expert when it comes to classical education. I'm very much still a student in terms of the school and the method, but I'm enjoying it very much. And I have on my list to read that book by Doug Wilson. I've heard good things about it as well. But we wanted to ask this question. We wanted to have you on this episode because who better to ask about why Christian education than from a Christian educator to give his take and his sort of state of affairs as to how things are in the world and why we need a Christian education. It's scary what's going on out there. It's we're I'd like to call Canada, particularly southwestern Ontario, like the capital of liberalism, so to speak, or progressivism. There's also these drag queen readings at libraries and stuff going on at the schools, and you're talking about like certain things that are being removed from libraries, certain books because of certain terms, and you kind of mentioned divorce, slavery, all that sort of stuff, which should be understood within its historical context. But I mean, it's not even just these old archaic terms. It's a lot of the everyday sort of lingo, male, female, marriage between a man and a woman, and all these basic components or building blocks of society of Western culture. I'm not 100% sure. I think it was Vodi Balcom who once said, you know, if you send your children to Rome, don't be surprised if they come back as Romans, which is another way of saying, don't be surprised if they come back pagans. I mean, for that very reason, we said, you know, it's going to cost us. It's going to be a lot more work, a lot more sacrifice, but we're going to homeschool our children. We're going to do what we can to raise them in the truth and to do our best in love of God and love of our family and love of our neighbor and for the sake of the church and the future of the church. So in light of that, now one desire, of course, that we've always had, and it's I think it's the desire of every parent, unless they have a very strong conviction of homeschooling only. You know, there's always that desire of wanting to send a child to or their children to a Christian school, or ideally a Christian classical school. But given the fact that, well, it's not cheap to send children to private school, first of all, and the government certainly isn't going to help with the cost, and nor would you want to, because we're already seeing how progressivism is just destroying the Roman Catholic school system. What advice would you give to parents who say, "Hey, you know, I want to send my kids to a school like that, but I really don't have the means to. I can't afford, you know, what options do I have? What kind of advice or counsel would you give in that sort of situation?"
Yeah, for sure. So without desiring to be self-serving, I would affirm everything that you're saying there, that a Christian family must provide. It is a, and I say must, I don't say that thoughtlessly. A Christian family has a responsibility to provide their Christian children with a Christian education. Now, if you come to our school, wonderful. If you homeschool, we've been working to provide resources and support for how to effectively do that, so that you can do that at home. It's important to recognize, first of all, as you know well, as you can all attest, homeschooling is not free either. So you look at tuition costs, and they're printed right up there. You know exactly what you're paying, and you know that number right up front can seem daunting to some families. But that's probably because you haven't looked closely at your annual spending on homeschooling stuff already, because it's you know it, you're talking about, well, I need some books here, and I need some school supplies here, and I need you know it's you know if it's $100, $200 at a time, several times throughout the year, and that makes it that hides those costs. So I would just say that you know there are people who think that you know it's the difference between paying tuition and not paying, but that's not actually the discussion. Otherwise, you know, if you believe that this is a good education, if you believe that this is something that is valuable for your child, you should understand that that these things cost. We want to make sure that we have the right people in place. Those people can't afford to do free full-time work. That we wouldn't expect that in any other vocation, and it's not realistic to expect it or ask for it in the context of education either. So there is some I'm sympathetic to the need to you know to be mindful of your family budget. This was something, as I mentioned, we got exposed to this before our children were ready. So we were committed to having them in the school at in Toronto. We were a single income family, a young family. These are all the reasons. All we were exactly the kind of people who couldn't afford to pay for private school, and that's actually most of us. If you've got elementary aged kids, then you are in the mo it, you are still starting out in your career in most cases. You have not gotten to the top of your organization. You are not earning, the kind of money that that most people would want to have to be comfortable enrolling in a private school. So I'm sympathetic to that. We made the decision to sacrifice. We sacrificed on, well, how many cars do we own? How many trips or vacations do we take? Things like that. Even and I know families and parents who have even moved. They've made the decision to either downsize or to get a house that has basement apartments that they can rent out to supplement their income so that they can have their children in Christian schools. It is and I'll tell you, being on this side of it, just like you hear people pastors preaching on the subject of tithing, once you get through to the other side of it where you are making those sacrifices to do this thing, it is so worth it. We have never encountered someone come through it and say, no, that wasn't it. That was a loss. That was a poor decision on our part. So there are those factors. And we're again, we're also one of the things that we are doing right now, we're running a launch campaign, a fundraising campaign for the school. A significant portion of that is for a bursary fund, because again, we understand the financial realities of life are what they are. So we've there are people who want to see Christian education flourish, not for Christian education's sake, but for the sake of our culture, for the sake of the next generation, these students who are going to be the leaders in their fields and in their society and neighborhoods in 10, 20 years. We want to see them raised up to be godly, thoughtful, wise, powerful, and effective. And that takes investment, now.
Thank you, Ryan. Really appreciate your time with us. Appreciate that you've set aside time from your busy schedule, homeschooling, prep for the Niagara Classical Christian Academy, and also and all the other related things, so that you can spend just a few minutes with us. If you want more information, be sure to check out the links that we are providing in our episode description. You can find out more about the Wolfheads. You can find out more about the NCCA. If you have any questions, feel free to contact us at our contact page on our website, and we'll be sure to pass that on to Ryan, if those are specific questions in relation to his school, in relation to the programs they offer, and so forth. Ryan, thank you so much for being with us.
It's a real privilege. Thanks for the invitation. Appreciate your work.
We look forward to having you on with us in the future as we dive deep into further worldview matters. If you're listening for the first time, be sure to subscribe. If you've been following back, make sure to share it. We're trying to increase our listener base as we move forward, and consider visiting our website to explore all of our resources as we seek to advance the Christian worldview. God bless you all.
The Apologist is a podcast of the Cantaro Institute, inheriting, informing, inspiring. As a registered charity, we impact countless around the world with our digital and print resources, thanks to your generous support and donations. We can't do this without you. Consider becoming a partner today. Visit www.cantaroinstitute.org/donate. Until next time, all rights reserved.